Good afternoon, everybody. This is the talk about anonymous communications, in case anyone is here by mistake. And I am George Danezis. I'm working in the computer security group in the University of Cambridge Computer Laboratory. And I have to say, being an academic myself, this is probably the largest audience I have ever spoken to. Our workshops are populated by 20 or 30 people at most, and half of them leave halfway through the talks as well. Feel free to do the same at any point. But the original subject of my talk, and probably the summary you have read to come here, was anonymous communications, and I promise to give an overview of the systems out there from a practical point of view and from what is to be done to really deploy these systems and help building them. Luckily, I will only speak about half the stuff that I promised, namely anonymous remailers, a way of anonymizing email, because Roger Dingeldine is here. He is the designer of the new Onion router, Tor, and he will be talking about how to do web browsing anonymously. So lucky everybody, we have a double bill today, basically. 2 hours of anonymity non-stop, maybe with just 5 minutes. So the objective of this talk is to kind of bring anonymous communications out of just the academic world. There has been a lot of research since the beginning of the 80s on how to achieve anonymous communications over deployed networks. This research has been marginal at best, even within the computer security academic community. And it is in the last few years only that we've seen solutions come out from volunteer projects mostly, and being usable for doing anonymous email and anonymous browsing. So I hope that what people get out of this talk is, well, three things, basically. First, I want all of you to go download the Mixed Minion and other anonymous email software or Tor and use it. Use it every time you feel like you're doing something that needs special protection, that needs more privacy than normal email or web browsing provides you today. The second thing I really like is if some of you who in your spare time or in your professional time work in implementing software or implementing solutions, I would like you to actually contribute your efforts to these projects, either directly through contributing code or by being aware that they exist and using them in third-party products or in plugins or whatever. And the third one is, if some of you are into that kind of stuff and you like doing research and you like analyzing and understanding systems really in depth and writing stuff about it and teaching people about how to do it, then I would really welcome you to do more in-depth research on how to achieve anonymous communications. It is unfortunate that, unlike cryptography, it is still a very young field, and there is a lot of research that is still needed. So lots of low-hanging fruit still there waiting to be picked, although there has been, as I said, research for 20 years. So I'm going to present where we are today and how we arrived where we are today, in particular in relation to anonymous email and the latest remailer that we've been designing, Mixed Minion. As I said before, Roger Dingeldine will talk about Tor in an hour's time, roughly, and he will give you all the information about how to do anonymous web browsing. So without going too much into the theory, I'd like to introduce first anonymous communications. I'll give the basic principles, a very simple-minded cryptographic construction. I'll give a few pointers to current research, again, in very few slides. Then a practical history of remailers, how these things were built, when were they built, what were they responding to. And then I'll talk mostly at the end about what is still to be done, and there is a long, long list. So let's start from the beginning, just in case you walked in here without having ever heard what anonymous communications are. You will realize if you walk in the street that very often, you just want to go to a shop to buy a magazine and you produce cash. You grab your magazine, no one knows who you are, goodbye, everybody's happy. Unfortunately, in the virtual world, this is not the case. If you just casually browse the web, or if you casually subscribe yourself to a mailing list to receive news, who you are, your identity in your email address or in your IP address can be logged, revealed, data mined. A lot of information can actually be extracted about who you are accessing this information. So our ideal is to provide systems, communication systems, that basically mimic, to a certain extent, the real world. We would like people to just casually browse websites without actually leaving data traces behind them about who they are and their relations to this information. And similarly, in the case of emailers, we would like people to be able to exchange emails, subscribe to mailing lists, send information to journalists, blow the whistle if they're not happy at their work or with the government, do human rights work, but also, do things like voting and buying things online without actually leaving a huge data trace that then can be mined and God knows what is done with it. So the property we'd like to have from a communication channel are quite simple. We would like basically Alice to be able to talk to Bob. Okay, these are the standard participants, without anyone, including Bob, knowing who she is. Okay, and this is somehow subtle, the fact that her communication partner, Bob, does not actually collaborate in providing anonymity. We would like her to hide even from Bob her identity. Now, the content of the communication is not something that bothers us, and some people are a bit confused by the fact that we consider that anonymous communications is something very different from confidential communications. But the way to think about it is in terms of an anonymous letter to a newspaper. Okay, I would like to write my opinion to a newspaper, for example, for it to be published. The content will be published and is public, but my name should not actually be public. Okay, so this is the simplest property, sending messages anonymously. The second property we would really like to have is for Bob to be able to reply to Alice without actually knowing that it is Alice he's replying to, without actually being able to trace who Alice is or finding out who Alice is. Okay, and this is somehow a bit more strange. This is just like, I can't even think of a real-world example. I don't know if anyone can think of one. So, I talk to you anonymously, and I say, Mr. Z. Oh, please, do you have an example?
Yes, you want to reply on your... The thing you publish in the magazine, you want to reply for it, and you ask for it, and when somebody wants to reply, you must receive the answer.
That is right. That is exactly the semantics we're looking for. It's a bit like having an anonymous post office box. People can send you messages, but you can never really tell who the person opening the post box is. That's the virtual equivalent, I guess. Okay? And of course, the two properties of sender anonymity and receiver anonymity could be combined so that, I, being anonymous, talk to someone else and I don't know who they are, and they can, of course, reply to me without, again, them knowing who I am. And I know it sounds a bit paranoid and a bit shady, but technically, given some rendezvous point to have initial contact, it should be possible. So far, we have talked about the light side. We have talked about things we would like to protect, identities within communications. But of course, there is the other side, and we have an adversary in this scenario. We have someone who would like to find out who the people communicating are. Okay, the adversary can take different hats and different names, and we really follow the computer security terminology for that. Eve could be one of the adversaries, and Eve is assumed to be able to observe everything that happens on the network links. Okay, so it's like if conceptually she could magically read what is happening on every single wire and every single router and every single switch that there is out there. Okay, now Mallory as an adversary is slightly more powerful because he can also modify messages, delete messages, and inject messages again into the network. Okay? So this is slightly more paranoid. Imagine someone that can change everything. that is traveling through the network. Now, as I mentioned before, Bob, Alice's communication partner, is actually collaborating with Eve or Mallory in trying to find out who you are. Okay, and it's obvious. Think about, you know, an anonymous death threat that arrives to the president. The president is pretty inclined to collaborate with, you know, the Secret Service or whoever in order to find out who sent the message. So Bob could actually be very interested in who Alice is. And as we will see when we discuss about how to achieve anonymous communications, we will rely on a set of third parties, mostly to relay our messages. And we will always be assuming that some of these third parties are controlled by the adversary. They are corrupt, they leak information, and they also don't follow the protocols correctly. Okay? Now, all this might sound to people who don't come from a computer security and cryptography background a bit paranoid. I mean, let's face it, no one's really looking at the whole network, let alone being able to modify all messages in the network, and really to corrupt even a very small number of third parties is considered quite difficult, you know, for some people. But fundamentally, the first argument is that we cannot foresee what is going to happen tomorrow. Okay, from a cabled world where all the communications were going through cables, we went to, for example, a wireless world a few years ago. Now, a lot of the communication in the Congress is through wireless routers. So suddenly now we can actually observe a lot of the network just by sitting with a, you know, with a little device, which was not really possible before with switched networks. So the world is changing, but the protection that systems that protect against these set of adversaries provide should still withstand basically the changes. And I mean, the other thing is that, you know, I actually don't know what the capabilities of very, very powerful adversaries are out there, and it's better to be on the cautious side or not when one can. And we are lucky that to a certain extent, when it comes to anonymous email communications, we can protect, you know, against a quite serious adversary that has some of these capabilities to, you know, quite realistically, okay? Now, the obvious question now is, okay, we have our requirements. We would like anonymous communications as we described it. We have our threat model, Eve, Mallory, Bob, the corrupt third parties. And now how do we do anonymous communications? Now, the answer is quite old and was provided in 1981 by David Chaum. And a lot of research has focused on developing the ideas that David Chaum, a cryptographer and a computer security specialist, has provided in 81. And what he basically put forward is a very simple construction that he calls the mix. Okay, and this is really the basic building block of anonymous communications. Now, what is a mix? A mix is like a router. It's like your normal router that routes packets or, you know, an email relay. So it takes messages in, okay, and routes the messages out to their recipients, but with a little security twist that makes the whole anonymity difference. And the twist is that this router tries to hide the correspondences between the inputs and the outputs that it has. So in the little box at the very bottom, I'm not sure if you can all see it, we see basically the messages coming in and the messages coming out, and their correspondence is revealed. Everybody looking, you know, can see this. A mix is a special box like that that makes it opaque, basically. It's not possible anymore to look at what corresponds to what. So now these three little arrows coming in to an outside observer like Eve and to someone who fiddles with the network outside like Mallory, it is not possible to tell where they come out. So suddenly, any of the messages coming out could have come out from who could have come in any of the three points. Okay? So, of course, this thing is not magic and has to be implemented somehow. Okay, we don't just trust that, oh, you know, no one's going to look, it's complicated, so we don't go any further. And really, we need two properties in order to build these mix boxes. The first one, obviously, to protect against Eve, is that the messages coming in must look different than the messages that come out. Now, this look different has actually quite some depth to it, because it means that any bit string, okay, in the input or the output messages should not link them together. Now, how we do that, we call this bitwise unlinkability, is using cryptography. The mix has a key, a public key that is known to the senders. The senders package their messages in such a way that when they get relayed in the mixed networks, as we will see soon, they get decoded, and therefore a message coming in gets decoded using a secret that the adversaries don't know and is output. And we have to basically carefully design this protocol so that no bit string can actually link the two messages. The second property that is very important, which is not actually disrupted by cryptography on a message-by-message basis, is the timing of the messages. Okay? If only one message arrives into this mix and one message comes out, then no anonymity at all is provided. It is pretty clear that the receiver of this message is talking, well, the sender is talking to the receiver. Okay? So what we need is to have a whole bunch of messages arriving in, waiting a bit, you know, kind of mixing them around, and then this whole bunch of messages leaving. Okay? And now we are not anymore able to tell which of these output messages corresponds to which of the input messages. I call this traffic analysis resistance, and there are different ways of achieving this kind of batching and mixing. And the key intuition is that different such strategies provide a different level of anonymity. It's better to mix your messages with another 1,000 rather than another 10. And different mixed strategies, on the other side, provide a different latency. Maybe you will have to wait much longer to mix your messages with another 1,000 messages rather than another 10 messages, okay? Because there are just not enough people sending messages through the network, okay? So these are the two key properties in order to make a good mix. And of course, and very often they are overlooked, there are lots and lots and lots of other attacks that one has to take care of that are somehow more related to the security of distributed systems rather than just being specific to mixes. Of course, the features interact. And this is flooding, denial of service, how to securely do network discovery, then attacks that take into account higher levels, such as sting attacks, saying, oh, hi, I know that this is the address of Superman, but do you happen to also be Clark Kent? Because, you know, I've lost my keys and I'm living next door, or something like this. Okay, so we can't protect against the very high-level attacks. We need other protocols to sanitize, and we're, at the end of the day, needing educated users to really make a full use of the anonymity systems. But we do try to take care of flooding, denial of service, network discovery, and things like that. And these are problems that are not solved at all yet. Okay? This is why I'm saying black magic, because fundamentally we have some good ideas, but our ideas don't scale, our ideas present some problems, and really much more research will be needing into them. Now, this is a technologically savvy audience, so I couldn't stop myself actually providing a simple-minded and, you know, insecure example. And I did put insecure on top of them so that if any of you goes out there, implements it, and then blames me, you know, I can kind of point back to it. And this is really how a mix works, okay? And I'm going to use these very simple cryptographic constructions to help illustrate additional requirements and kind of motivate why it's not actually such a very simple block to construct. So, in this particular case, we have Alice, and Alice first packages her message M by encrypting it with the private key of the mix K, and also putting the routing information, namely that the message has to arrive to Bob. So she then sends this encrypted BM to the mix. The mix decrypts it and knows that this message M has to be sent to B. It's a simple world, it's a simple construction. As long as this encryption operation is done with good taste and care, it should work. Okay? Now, when we start saying, okay, you know, I quite like this construction, it's simple, but fundamentally, I have to trust mix, this mix there, in order to, you know, to be anonymous. If this mix starts talking or is corrupt, as we assume, then it's not really going to work. So wouldn't it be nice if we rely on more of them, so that if at least one of them is honest, we still have some guarantees of anonymity? And this is really what I'm illustrating in the second example here. What Alice can do is it can actually put two layers, one encrypted for mix one and then one encrypted for mix two, and the message just trickles through the network. It's decoded at each stage. It is also padded to keep its message length fixed, and finally it is sent to Bob. Now, it seems like if it is not really a big difference using one to n mixes, but fundamentally we suddenly have more requirements for, you know, our mixed network. We really like to find a way of selecting honest nodes, and this is a trust problem that, as I said, we haven't completely resolved. We would like to hide the total number of hops, because there are attacks otherwise, mostly actually described by Andreas Fitzman, who's in Dresden. And we would like to hide from a corrupt mix, if, for example, this mix is controlled by the adversary, which position it has in the path of this particular message traveling. Again, knowing that, I'm actually the second mix down the path, will give it information about who is sending or who is receiving a message. So, and also, in selecting the mixes in a network, we care how you select them, in not how much you trust each of them, but do you actually always select all of them in a series? Can you relay messages through the network, like if all the mixes are connected to all the other ones? If we're talking about location anonymity, for example, some mixes might be closer to others, some mixes might provide lower latency, you might have a lot of other engineering issues there to look at. So there are many more requirements, and it only gets more complex, unfortunately, because suddenly we said that we would like to be able to reply anonymously. Now, this sounds like black magic, and actually might even look like black magic given this slide, but the concept is pretty simple. Alice constructs a set of reply blocks, and a reply block can be thought as being an anonymous address, okay, that you can use to reply to. And what then Bob does is he is provided with this reply block by Alice using an anonymous communication means, such as a message to her. And now he wants to reply. So conceptually and practically as well, that's not good. So conceptually, Bob appends his message M to the reply block that has a structure that looks very, very much like an anonymous message. It is just layered keys, S1 and S2. What happens is that this bundle basically travels through mix 2 first. Mix 2 decodes the reply block using its secret key K2, and then encode the message M using one of the secret keys inside the reply block. Okay, so there are two operations happening here. As the message progresses, the reply block is slowly stripped, while the message is slowly encrypted using the secrets in the reply block. Okay, and as the message travels at the end, it reaches Alice. There is a bug in my slides. Instead of being B, it should be A up there. Oh, well. But it reaches Alice being encrypted under lots and lots of session keys that were present in the reply block. Now, Alice has constructed this reply block and sent it to Bob in some time in the past and knows these session keys and therefore can decrypt the message and receive M. At the same time, Bob cannot actually decrypt any of the secrets without the help of the intermediary nodes, and therefore cannot actually find that it is Alice he's talking to. That's the magic. Any questions?
But the message has then always to go back exactly the same way as before, so there's no different routing then.
So there is actually different routing because this thing here is just a bit string, okay, conceptually. This reply block is just a bit string. It's not constructed as it travels forward in the network. It is something that Alice constructs and sends it to Bob using any route she wants. So you can construct 10 reply blocks, and they're just large strings of bits. You put them in a message that you send anonymously to me using any route you like, and then I use them to reply back to you. Okay? Now, the route you've used to contact me is completely independent from the route I use to contact you back. The thing that is a problem is that once you construct these reply blocks, I have to use the route you have encoded into them. That is the catch. Okay, so
another catch is, of course, that if I can then use that reply block to send 10,000 messages, I can just follow this big blob of 10,000 messages around in the network.
That is correct. And David Shaum has said that both forward messages, sender anonymous messages, and reply blocks have to only be used once, something that the very latest generation of remailers does, but not very early ones. I will talk exactly about this thing in a second. Should I go ahead? Oh.
The problem is when one mix in the reply block I use falls away, then I never receive a reply. Is this correct?
That is correct. So fragility is a problem here, and I will indeed talk exactly about that in a second as well. Okay, so this is the principle, but this principle was pretty much put forward in 81. Since then, there has been a lot of research, okay? And somehow the field has forked. On one side, we have remailers, okay? And these are used for high latency, pretty much constant, you know, but around the same size messages, around, you know, 10Ks an email, I don't know, with an attachment can be larger, but most of them are this kind of order of magnitude. And this is really the main topic of my talk. I'll just mention what the other areas of anonymous communications are. And the second one is onion routing, which is for low latency, very high variability of traffic. This is web browsing. This is a whole lot of other TCP-like applications. Roger will talk about these at 3 o'clock, and he will tell you everything about them. There is a bunch of other systems or research proposed on how to do that on top of ISDN, or YAP is another actually German local relatively product that does that. You will learn everything about this soon. The third category of schemes are basically provable mixed systems, and these are really the product of cryptographers mainly. And they go to extreme lengths making sure that the mixes are reliably relaying messages without actually dropping any on the floor. And this is very important for elections where you want all the ballots cast to be indeed counted and received. You want very high, basically, confidence that no messages are ever deleted. But there are constructions that are at the same time extremely expensive. There are also a bunch of other ways of doing anonymous communications which are not completely mixed-based. To start with, you can have very simple proxies, open mail relays, I don't know, even SSL-based anonymizer type things. And they're good, you know, as long as basically people are looking the other way or, you know, the adversary is quite weak and cannot compel them to tell secrets. But, you know, they don't provide the same guarantees. Then there are Dunning cryptographers networks, and, you know, behind this name actually lies a very serious construction. It's a distributed computation that provides an anonymous message at the end. They are very expensive. They require lots of broadcasts to implement. They are quite fragile, and the protocols to stop them being fragile are also very complicated, so none of them has ever really been implemented. And of course, on top of that, there are really cool hacks that work for maybe a year or two while they're being fixed, such as, you know, using wireless open access points and, you know, maybe using steganography on some poorly designed protocols and such things. And all of these can be used to do anonymity and are actually in practice more used than any of the systems that have been designed for anonymity. But that's another story and has to do with how few systems we fielded. On top of these, mixed systems that I will talk and the practical ones that I will really look at, there are a bunch of theoretical schemes. And these, although have never really been implemented and deployed, have been very influential in designing fielded systems, particularly mixed meaning that I will talk into some detail. I just want to mention the names. Babel was a remailer by Gene Chudik and all. SG Mixes was proposed by Dogan Kestogan here in Aachen to combat a very special problem, which is flooding attacks against networks. Bodo Möller, also from Germany, has provided a provable mix scheme that is quite interesting because it's practical at the same time. And Ben Laurie and I have done some work on Minx, which is an extremely efficient remailer, but we're not yet sure it is secure. We're in the Well, we're trying to prove it's secure, but it doesn't quite work. At the same time, but trust me, I know what I'm doing. At the same time, you know, beside the schemes that have been proposed in the academic literature, there has been a lot and a lot and a lot of analysis of how anonymous communication systems work. To start with, how to measure anonymity. Anonymity is this kind of cloudy feeling, but actually you can put numbers to it. You can compare systems. You can use information theory to find out how much information an adversary is missing to identify you. And all this stuff has been done. A lot of people have been doing work about how to relate anonymity with covert channels. Well, a lot of people, three or four maybe. But there is a lot of action there. Then, more related to mixed networks and remailers, there has been a lot of work on trying to really, really understand mixed strategies, dummy traffic, and such things. Roger has done some. You should really question him about these. Again, lots of work has been done on how you should choose the routes in a set of mixes, basically. Do you take them serially? Do you just select them randomly? Do you actually try to, you know, make them all work together in synchrony? All these have different properties. And it goes on, basically. I don't want to, like, go very much into the academic literature, because otherwise we won't have time for the interesting stuff. But there is a lot of analysis in there, and please, if you're interested, I will provide pointers. But let's talk practical stuff, you know. How, in the last 10 years, one is able to send anonymous email. And this is really how the talk will continue from now on. Now, at the beginning, there was basically pnet.fi. And this was really to be thought as the first remailer. And it's been extremely influential in its success and its failure as well. Pnet basically was a very, very simple proxy. You sent email to pnet. Pnet would remove all the headers from the email that could identify you as the sender. It would substitute a return address for you and send the email on. Now, if someone wanted to reply, what they would do is just reply to this substituted email address. The email reply will be routed through pnet that will then substitute your real address and send it back to you. Just a simple proxy. Simple-minded is good, but in order to actually be able to do this kind of two-way routing, it had to keep a very large file with the correspondences between these pseudonymous addresses and your real email address. Unfortunately, in 1996, it fell due to a legal attack. The Church of Scientology, and I don't want to be sued here, so whatever their proper name and trademark name is, basically asked for the identification of one of the users that used pnet in order to send some, well, copyrighted material or something like this. Johann basically had no choice. He went to court over this. He didn't just hand it over. He went to court on constitutional grounds, on grounds of free speech. The case is well documented out there. But at the end, he had to give out the correspondence. And as a result, he also closed down PNET because he felt he can't actually fulfill his promises, which is to provide real anonymity for his users. So it was a sad event, but the world moved on. And it was an event that had a profound impact, basically, on the community that then had to move on and create something better. And what was slightly better was the Cypherpunk remailer. And the code appeared on the Cypherpunk list, I believe. It was actually submitted anonymously, and although I think now people know who it was, I will respect that wish. Maybe someone might correct me. Oh, well. And this was at the time where the Cypherpunks, which was a group around a mailing list and around the world, really, wrote code to fight the crypto wars. And, you know, the Type 1 remailer uses actually crypto in order to achieve most of the stuff that one would expect from the mix. It uses crypto to provide bitwise unlinkability, which means that you can't recognize trivially messages coming in and link them to messages coming out. That doesn't quite work, actually. There are a few attacks against it, but it's okay. I mean, they weren't documented until much later, so that could give you some hope. But it uses PGP in order to provide the cryptography. And again, that has some problems because PGP was not really designed for that purpose. But what is important is that it uses slightly more secure reply blocks. Instead of storing the correspondences between, you know, your pseudonymous address and your real address into a large file, it kind of creates something that looks like a reply block as I've described it, an encrypted block with your email address that can be used for routing. Now, unfortunately, and as a gentleman mentioned before, these reply blocks could be replayed again and again and again and again and again, which means that suddenly you can reply with 100,000 messages, which would really look suspicious and come out in the network. And that is not too good. If you can also reuse reply blocks, you can do sophisticated, or actually not that sophisticated, tagging attacks where you change a bit of the message, you try to route it, it doesn't quite work well, you change a bit something else and try to route it and so forth. And try to basically tag messages like you tag banknotes in a hostage situation. So the answer to that, to all these problems, and Type 1 is not that secure, is the Type 2 Mixed Master Remailer. Lance Cottrell contributed the first code, Ulf Moller really cleaned it up, and Len Sassaman and Peter Palfrader are maintaining it now. And I say Len Sassaman plus plus because there is actually a team. Is there a team?
Well, there have been a few contributors, but not that many.
Okay, well. Huh, I didn't know that. So anyway, so single-handedly, Peter and Len are basically the heroes that maintain Mixmaster. And Mixmaster is much better than the Type 1 remailers. It uses the custom crypto that actually has been designed to provide bitwise unlinkability, so that's always good. It has a fixed-size payload, which means that you can't trivially look at the message lengths and find out which message corresponds to which in the network. And it also has the facility to split large messages into smaller ones and route them and so forth. The problem with it is, and this is the reason why the Type 1 more less secure remailer still exists, is that it doesn't provide facilities for reply blocks. So that is a problem because suddenly you find yourself in a position where you can only talk to someone but never hear back from them. Okay? So that was a problem, but overall it is quite secure and well maintained, I would say. I would hope rather than say. But as a result of the lack of reply blocks, we couldn't, as a community, phase out the Type 1 remailers. That was a problem, because now there is actually critical mass of attacks against them. So what has been decided at some point in the past is that a Type 3 remailer is needed, and the pun name for it is Mix Minion. So this was quite a serious effort in that actually some people, again, sat down and designed the things and thought, well, what is required for a mixed you know, for a remailer to actually work. Mainly the work has been done by Roger Dingwall Nye, Nick Matthews, and myself. Lots of other people contributed, including the Mix Master crew that I believe have a lot of faith in it these days. Now, in a nutshell, what Mixminion does and is different from the others is that it allows for anonymous sending of messages like Mixmaster of 32 kilobytes chunks at the time, fixed size. It has the ability to actually reply to anonymous messages through anonymous, single-use reply blocks, so you can't actually repeat the reply blocks again and mount this attack. And also the way in which reply blocks are handled is exactly the same as far as the network is concerned with normal messages. So you can't really divide the two networks into one network that sends, one network that has replies, because that would weaken anonymity. And it was a bit of juggling to manage the two to be the same, but it's something that is possible and something that is implemented. On top of that, it has some special features like, you know, you don't reveal the path length or the position in the path and such things. All these are taken care of. But as a little twist, we also made sure that instead of using SMTP, normal email, to talk from remailer to remailer, we actually use a custom protocol, well, SSL and a custom protocol underneath, which makes it forward secure. So if Eve eavesdrops on the lines, the bits she has are meaningless unless one of the two communication participants is also corrupt. Okay, that is pretty cool because it means that you can't anymore observe the network and expect to get anything useful out of it. Now, Mixminion is from, you know, rather old now. We are much wiser as a result of designing it. But it is still the state of the art. It is implemented. There is code out there. There are people running servers out there. There are mail messages transiting around and an infrastructure. So it is the state of the art, and this is what I hope we are going to build upon when it comes to anonymous email communications. Now, so Mixminion is written in Python. It is, you know, not finished yet at all. It is in alpha, but it is good code. It is stable, usable. It has very good documentation, both a design document, a specification, archived mailing lists, and everything you would expect from, you know, a good engineering practice. So please go out there, download it, use it, and most importantly, run servers if you can afford to. The bandwidth is not enormous. The danger of actually being subpoenaed has not yet materialized when it comes to Mixminion, I believe. But you can also run mixes that do not interact directly with the world, and therefore you are actually in the second line of defense rather than the first one. You can make these choices according to how you feel and how your upstream provider feels. It would be fantastic to have more servers, and particularly servers outside the US these days. So, I know it's only 10 minutes, and maybe this clapping was for me to move on and give the floor to someone else, but there are some things that we would still like to do, and that we don't have many people to do, and many people to do research on them. To start with, and I'm not going to bother with the summary since we're, you know, on the way of finishing, we have a problem with our trust infrastructure. For the moment, we have one person listening to people saying, I would like to run a server, you know, a Mixminion remailer. Could you add me to the list? But of course, this is not going to scale. Okay, this is not going to scale when we're so successful and we have hundreds and hundreds of servers out there. So we need to find a way of distributing this information in a way that is secure. And secure in this context means high availability and high integrity. We don't want people to say, who are the servers out there, and hear no reply. And we would not like any adversary to be able to fiddle and fill these lists with corrupt servers. So there are lots of problems there, and some are research problems, some are implementation problems. Probably we will have a strategy of slowly decentralizing the network until we find the ultimate solution, but it will have to be done. The second problem, which is, again, something that is half solved, only half though, is reliability. As someone pointed out before, if one of our servers go down, then messages that have to be routed through this will never be routed. Okay? So we need a way of knowing how often servers are down and really pruning out those who are not really good at maintaining their servers' uptime. So right now this is done using pingers, and Peter is the author of one of these pingers. Pingers just send messages around in loops, basically, through the network and make inferences about which servers are up and down using that. This is a crude but effective approach. Unfortunately, we don't know yet how to integrate these results in a safe way into the route selection. We would not like the adversary to be able to use any such mechanism to just route through corrupt nodes. So it has to be done again in good taste, and some more thinking and work will have to be done on this. The third thing is reliable transmission. When messages get dropped, it would be nice if conceptually the emails still arrive. Magic. Now, you can do that using, you know, TCP-like mechanisms, resending. You can do that using duplication by just sending three messages and hoping one of them makes it. You can use that doing something more smart, like error correcting codes. You can do that using a mixture of all these things. Right now, none of this is done, except, I believe, for the an out-of-K scheme that is being implemented, that is implemented now, yeah. Now, at the same time, we would like a standardized way to send messages that can be replied to. Right now, we, again, just rely on people including by hand a reply block. This is not good. I don't want anyone to look at hexadecimal strings, otherwise they just won't use Mixminion. Okay, so we need a way of just having something that provides the TCP-like guarantees on top of Tor, namely that messages will arrive, and that people will be able to reply to them. Okay? And one way to do it should be good enough. People should not have to replicate these things. Now, importantly, Mixminion should talk to the rest of the world. I apologize for running a bit over, but I started also a bit over, so I'll just go through very quickly. So Mixminion sends email, but doesn't just send email to other people who have Mixminion. It would be nice to be able to send email to those who just receive normal email. This is done. You can do it now. But most importantly, it would be nice if other people can reply to you using simple email. Okay? And this infrastructure is known as NIM servers. It just relies on writing to george@nim@alias.net, and this machine, nim@alias.net, packages the message using a reply block of mine and just sends it through Mixminion, and I just receive it on the other side. Now, conceptually, this is how it works, but there is a lot and a lot of talk about how to do this securely. We would not like to store a large number of reply blocks because of traffic analysis attacks, and there are also alternative strategies to do that, like private information retrieval, that have not been really looked at in the past very much. And these might be actually a promising avenue. Most importantly, though, and this is really something that I believe people in here could do, is the creation of usable clients. If people don't have clients that just support Mixminion out of the box, okay, anonymous communications will remain in this slide. No one's going to use them. Some people will use them just once or twice, but that's going to be it. Amnesty International and the field people they have will not be using it. Okay? People doing political organizing will not use it. People fearing for their lives in XYZ country cannot use command line stuff. So there are many options, actually, to integrate it with clients. And the first option is to write the clients from scratch. You know, that's good. It's a lot of effort to write a good email client. Thunderbird developers know that. And it's not actually, you know, a very familiar experience for users. So, but if you have the energy and the time, it's by far the best security-wise solution. So go ahead if you feel like real heroes. The second option is to actually integrate Mixminion capabilities into deployed clients. Both Thunderbird and Outlook have capabilities to have plugins. Wouldn't it be marvelous if we could just have a checkbox in Outlook saying anonymous aside the encrypted and signed? And you just click the box and your email goes and no one can trace where it came from and it can be replied to anonymously too. That would be great. Disadvantages, of course, are that there might be feature interactions. The products might change under our feet. And again, maintenance will be a problem, and we will get it right by version 3 probably only. The third option is what PGP these days, PGP Universal, does, which is to just have a proxy that just sits on your own machine or on your subnet and just anonymizes all the mail coming through and decodes the anonymous mail coming on the other side. This again is very lightweight. We already have a prototype in the Mixminion source tree that does that. But some heavy filtering will be required to really eliminate all the information, since we don't control what the client sends. So there are some wild research ideas, but for the benefit of our sanity, I'll leave them out and time as well. And I will just conclude by saying that Mixminion really is for a very specific domain, namely sending and receiving email, not for everything, the state of the art today. And we would really like if people use it and people provide servers and infrastructure for it. Now it's time basically to do this job aside from the development job. But at the same time, although it is very well documented, it is, you know, carefully designed and all these things, there are still some gray areas, particularly when it comes to the infrastructure, the trust, the directories, the NIM servers, the reliable transmission, that need some engineering work. And if you have some spare engineering cycles in your brain, then this is definitely a worthwhile project to give them to, because it will actually go ahead and be used by people. If you know how to write a Thunderbird client, then please tell me, because I haven't found anyone who does, and it seems that this is the best kept secret in the open source community. So just let me know. And then at the end of the day, you know, if you want to use anonymous communications, I don't think Microsoft is going to provide you with it. So you are the person you have been looking for to help build the system, both from a technical point of view, running service point of view, and doing all the other stuff.